हरे सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, so we finished with the pratyaksha, right? So pratyaksha means that it's being gained through the senses, and in being gained through the senses, then you have that it is either directly through the senses, and then from that it's either conclusive or not, means you actually understand what you're looking at or perceiving, or not. If it's conclusive, that's considered valid evidence. If it's not, then one would have to investigate further. Then of those things that are exceptional, then you have or extraordinary, then you have what is dealing with, you're seeing something with the senses, but the conclusion is actually being come to by the mind, subtle things that the senses can't perceive. All right? So then that would mean either through the spirituality, that of yogaja, or then jnana lakshana, and then that from previous experience you can identify a quality of something that you can't actually perceive, yes, with one sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay.
Through one sense you're actually understanding what's perceivable by another. Means ultimately everything's going back to Krishna, but because Krishna is ever fresh, therefore the experience can be new.
Yeah.
But at least the concept of what's there is not. Cooking is cooking, food is food, but there may be newer and newer experiences in the quality of the food.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. That you can have. But you know what things are there. So in other words, the example is given, you look at some food and you say, that looks delicious. How do you know it looks delicious? You can just see the colors and shapes and all that. Because you know that when those certain colors are there, certain balance is there, you know, certain amount of the moistness or other things that are considered good qualities, then you know that from previous experience, when you tasted it, you saw it like that, you tasted it, it was a good taste. Now you see it, you can see it's good. Right? So this is used a lot, jnana lakshana, association. Also human beings will use this more. It means that you're using from sight, you try to understand everything. Right? Animals, their main sense of understanding something is smell. Right? Of course, it goes back to hearing for humans. But if you're looking at something, it's through sight. So therefore, if you have a preparation that you don't know what it is, then the animal will smell it to try to find out, while the human will look at it to try to find out. Does that make sense? Yeah. But even, you know, smelling, you can only get a certain aspect of it. You're still dealing with some aspect of the jnana. Right? And then, what was the last one? What is the third one? Okay, Samanya. Samanya Lakshana. Oops. Okay, so you're connecting something that you know the nature of a particular group, so therefore if you can identify something in that group, you know the nature of it. Right? And that makes sense. Like, you've understood what dogs are, so if you can identify something as a dog, you can say some certain basic, you know, general nature of it. Right? In Jnana Lakshana, then you can attribute to it by association qualities that you can't tell by that that sense. And then the other is through basically through austerity, then you get understandings that aren't there. So that would be something that may come from previous lifetimes and stuff like that. But the point is like you said, everything goes back to Krishna anyway. So that's what we're trying to see. But if you don't see it in connection with Krishna, then you're dealing with the mundane. So even if you're dealing with Krishna, still these apply. But emotion is subtle also. So what do you mean by subtle? Okay. But you do have emotional. You can see what is that someone looks happy or sad or this or that, because you're just seeing. And from that you can tell their emotion. So that would be the... Does that make sense? Yeah, well, maybe we'll keep going over this, and that means this, as we go on, it'll be pulled together more, so we can understand how the back is, previous ones are, because this one is more technical. The other things I think are going to be much more, you know, linear than they're like this. But this one, you have so many overlapping aspects, so depending upon how you're looking at it, that part becomes prominent. Oh, okay. Okay, so then inference. Nyaya philosophy provides a detailed and systematic description of inference. Inference is the process of knowing something, not by means of contact between the senses and the objects of the world, and not by observation, but rather through the medium of a sign or linga that is invariably related to it. Inference involves the process of analyzing, memorizing, correlations and uncontaminated arguments. There is a systematic method for testing the validity of inferential knowledge, for there are always some inseparable constituents to an inference, and if any of these parts are missing or defective, then the knowledge inferred is invalid, right? Because you have to be able to tell inference, because we work on that a lot. You see somebody doing something, then you infer that they're, you know, up to some nonsense, or, you know, they're motivated, or so many things that we infer. So this is the system of whether you, how you can actually tell if inference is valid. The Sanskrit word for inference is anuman, and may be defined as quote, the cognition or knowledge that follows from some other knowledge. Right? You have a previous knowledge, and so this knowledge then follows from that. Two examples are, the hill is on fire because there is smoke on the hill. And where there is smoke, there is fire. Right? This one always is working. You know, people apply. But it may not be valid because, you know, there's a rumor about someone. And so then when that someone is questioned, then they will, you know, and if they say that it's not true, then the person questioning, then because they can't find any evidence and they want to find, right? They want to find some fault. Therefore, they may use this inference, but where there's smoke, there's fire. There was some rumor. Something must be there. But it is true. There is some smoke, so there would be a fire. But it's wrong to it may be wrong to necessarily think the fire is in the person who the rumor is about. The fire may be in the people who are creating the rumors. Because they have those qualities, then they see something in their mind, that's what they'd be doing if they were in that situation. So therefore, then they say that this is, they infer that this is what's happening. So that becomes the smoke, you know, what they've seen and what they're inferring from. But the basis of knowledge that they're taking it from is their own inclination rather than the inclination of the other person. Does that make sense? So then you could say, yes, where there's smoke, there's fire. But the point is where is that fire? Yes, yes, yeah. We have limited perception.
Yeah. So that's our field of vision until we get a new experience of awareness, is it?
Yes.
So therefore with inference, everything being taken from what's standard in the
baby. Yes.
These
means
qualities is like for example when we go to Mahabharata, there's so many qualities around and so many examples of given of character and natures and situations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it means the idea is that even inference should be based on Shabda. Yes, Shabda means authority. So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that would be Shabda. So an inference is based on Shabda, the Pratyaksha, or the perception is based on Shabda. Then it starts to work right. The difficulty comes is if people say something is wrong, and there may be something wrong, but where is the authority for their either observation or inference of it being wrong? Is it coming from authority, means from Shastra, or is it coming from what they would, what nowadays would be deemed authority, but is actually just, you know, the people's opinions? Right? That's the difference. So that's why all of this must be based on authority. Otherwise, then it's going to be, it's going to have some problem. It's going to have problem. And John is mortal because he is a man, and all men are mortal. Right? In other words, you have the thing, the hill is on fire because there's smoke on the hill. You see this hill. And so the point is where there's smoke, there's fire. Fire produces smoke. So if you see smoke, you know there's fire. You understand? Or John is mortal because he's a man, therefore you reverse it, therefore men are mortal. Does that make sense? Something is producing a symptom, you see the symptom, then you say that that origin that produces the symptom is there, but it might be something different. Right? In the first example, we perceive smoke on the hill and arrive at the knowledge of the existence of fire on the hill on the basis of our previous knowledge of the universal relationship between smoke and fire. In the second example, we begin with the perception of a man, John, which inspires the knowledge of the mortality of John based on our previous knowledge of the universal relationship between men and mortality. Thus, it is apparent that inference is a process of reasoning in which one passes through certain necessary stages to reach a conclusion, which is called inferential knowledge. The necessary stages are the conditions for a valid inference. Right? In other words, you have to go through a process to get to a conclusion. So it must go through particular stages. Right? Without going through these stages, the inference won't be valid. In the process of inference, one reaches a conclusion regarding a particular fact through the knowledge of a sign and of the sign's universal relationship to the conclusion. Right? So you have a particular fact, it has a sign or a symptom. So because those two are always connected, therefore if you see one, you can understand the other is there. Right? Where there's smoke, there's fire. You could also say where there's fire, there's smoke. You know what I'm saying? But the fire can burn cleanly without smoke, but smoke means that there's a fire. Right? But what kind of fire you think it is, where that fire is, that may be because something completely different. In the example of the inference of fire on a hill, one ascertains the presence of the unperceived fire on the hill through the perception of the smoke on the hill, because one already has the knowledge of the universal relationship between smoke and fire. A primary condition of this inference is the knowledge of smoke on the hill. This part of the inferential process is called linga, or sign. Next arises the awareness of the universal relationship between smoke and fire, based on past observations. This is known as vyapti. As a result of this, knowledge of the existence of the unperceived fire on the hill arises. This stage is called nirnaya, or conclusion. In the terminology of logic, the hill is the minor term, paksha. In this inference, because the hill is the subject under consideration. Fire is the major term, sadhya, because this is what we want to prove in relation to the hill. The presence of smoke on the hill is the middle term, linga, because it is the sign that indicates the presence of fire. The middle term is also called hetu, or sadhana, meaning the reason or grounds for inference. Right? Ooh, also in the Panchanga Nyaya, then, I think he uses hetu as his term also. Oh, I see, okay. Statements, hetu, yeah, reason. Okay. Three parts of inference. Thus, an inference contains three parts, the minor term, paksha, the major term, sadhya, and the middle term, hetu, or linga. So it means the paksha is what is concerning, right? That's the minor term. The major term, sadhya, means then what conclusion you're trying to come to, right? And then the middle term is the element that connects the two, right? You're trying to come to, you see smoke on the hill, so the hill is the minor, the smoke is then the middle part, and then what that means, that will be your major, right? Does that make sense? So the hill, the smoke, then that means some conclusion. So it's not the hill that's actually giving the thing, it's the smoke. Does that make sense? In the process of inference, the first step is the apprehension of smoke, hetu, on the hill, paksha. The second step is the recollection of the universal relationship between smoke and fire, hetu and sadhya. And the third step is the cognition of fire, sadhya. When used as a formal statement or verbal expression designed to convince others, however, the structure of inferences change. In stating an inferential verbal expression for others, the first step will be the predication of the major term in relation to the minor term. There's fire on the hill. Right? Does that make sense? Because it means you're going to be putting together what is the conclusion there, because the smoke is how you just got about it. That's why it's the middle term. So the actual things that are connected are the hill and the fire, not the hill and the smoke. And you're saying the smoke is how you understand the fire is connected to the hill. The second step will be the formation of the middle term in relation to the minor term. There's visible smoke on the hill. The third step will be the formation of the middle term in its universal or invariable relationship with the major term. Where there's smoke, there's fire. In this last step, it is sometimes helpful to use a specific example to confirm the relationship between the middle term and the major term. For instance, where there's smoke, there's fire, as in the kitchen. Right? In other words, we're going through the Panchanga Nyaya now. You understand? means the first thing, your conclusion, what your conclusion is, there's fire on the hill. How you got there was is that there's smoke on the hill. That's the reason for your conclusion. Does that make sense? Now, then you have to give the example. So you have to connect smoke and fire. And so either you just give the nyaya of it, that logic, or you give some example. So example is generally the best way something's going to work. Because there's only so many nyayas given. You know what I'm saying? Like the what do you call it? Matsya nyaya means is that the big fish eats the small fish. Right? So if there's no management, whoever's tougher and bigger and nastier and stinkier, they'll bother the one that's less. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Unless he's really stinky, then no one's going to bother him. Right? Yeah. Yes?
So, you want to find an example for something, what is the best way of doing it?
What is the best way to find an example? It's off of the reason that you're coming to your conclusion. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's from the middle term. From the linga. Right? It's all that's known as, in the Panchanganya, it's known as hetu. Right? So you're establishing the point is given. There's fire on the hill. But how do you come to that conclusion? Because there's smoke on the hill. Does that make sense? Because the smoke then therefore defines that there's fire in the hill. But how does that mean anything? What's the connection? Therefore, the third part, you give your examples. You know, just as in a kitchen, when there's fire, then there's smoke. Like you've been in the kitchen, you start the fire, it gets very smoky, so everyone has to... So then one connects those things.
So basically taking the elements and putting them in some other situation.
Putting them in another situation. Yeah, in other words, you put them in a situation that would have some meaning to the person you're trying to explain it to. Does that make sense? Right. So then that gives your first three. So you've dealt with all three. You've started with the minor, but you've given the major. Right. It means you've started with your paksha, and then you're ending up with your sadhya, what you're trying to gain, your goal. So fire on the hill, yes.
Also, that fire is invisible. So therefore,
fire is invisible.
Therefore,
yes.
Anything which is visible, we connect to the is invisible. That's why examples we connect to the fire, because we don't see it.
Yes.
And the smoke we do.
Yes, we see the smoke. We see the hill. So, but the conclusion is not the smoke in the hill. The conclusion is fire in the hill. But how we get to it is there's smoke on the hill. That's the reason. So there's something logical. In other words, you make a statement, then you give some logic about it. Then you give example to show how that logic works. Yes? No? Thus, inference may be said to be a syllogism consisting of at least three categorical premises. But when one is analyzing the whole process of an inference, and especially when one is using inference to prove or demonstrate something, then it is necessary to state the inference in a systematic and comprehensive chain of arguments. One must then state a syllogism in the form of five premises. Right? Because the first thing, it dealt with all three, so that all three were represented. Right? Your conclusion... That's, you know, the medium for it's the hill, right? That's the place of action or what we're dealing with. Then there's the smoke, how we got there. There's the fire, which is our conclusion. So all three have been dealt with, right? So you've done the minor and the major. Then you've done visible smoke. Yeah. Then we're doing the minor and the middle. Then we're doing the middle and the major. You know what I'm saying? So you're trying to connect them together. You've connected A and C. So next that you say that, well, there's a relationship between A and B. But, and because B is related to C, therefore A is related to C. Right? Does that make sense? So all those three have been represented, but in a logical presentation where you're trying to establish the point, then besides these three, there'll be two more, so there's five total. Yes? No? Very good. Why not? Okay. These five premises of yayas that constitute a valid inference are pratigya, fact. You know, that's your theory. Hetu, your reasons. Udaharana, example. Upanaya, application. And nigamana, conclusion. Here's an example. It means an example of the process, not an example meaning the third position. Okay, one, which is your fact, pratigya. John is mortal, that's the fact. Two, because he is a man, that's the reason. Right? Then three, all men are mortal, for example, Napoleon, Lincoln, Socrates, and so on. Right? Then four, John is a man, application. So you've gone back to it. And five, therefore John is mortal, conclusion. Right? So in other words, you're inversing what you've done in one and two is inversed in four and five. That makes sense? You're stating the fact. John here is, John is immortal, or John is mortal. Because, two, because he is a man. Right? So the man is the point. Right. So then, John is the minor, right? And the mortality consideration is the major, the pratigya, what you're trying to establish, right? But you're establishing it in relationship to John, like before, the fire. The fire is what you're trying to establish, but it's fire in connection to the hill, right? So then, how do you make that connection? Then that is because he's a man. Right? So that's the third, the linga, or the hetu. Right? Does this make some sense? Right? So that's why you're saying that's what proves it. Right? Then the third, all men are mortal. You have to give the, you know, that you combine that thing about it. Because you have to create okay, because the third point means is you're establishing the middle point with the major point. It's universal connection. See, inference is always working on universal principles. Does that make sense? So, yeah, you want to say something? So, no? Okay. So, universal principles. So, now you're always going to have a problem is that dealing with universal principles means you have to have a lot of knowledge and a lot of contemplation to be able to come up with such things. Right? But now if the universal principles are based on the authority of the Shastra, therefore you can always work within this principle. So since all the Vaishnava philosophy has to be presented through these five stages, that means you have to be able to establish universal truths. Right? And see the connection between those truths and what is seen and what is not seen. Right? So in other words, the universal truth is there, and that will connect then the conclusion that you're trying to establish in connection with a particular object or situation. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's important to understand the philosophy in this way, because then you're dealing with universal truths. You're dealing with Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, you're dealing with universal truth. You know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, is universal truth. Right? So all these different things, the Dasa Mool, these are universal truth. So when you know that, then through the process of this logic, you know how to establish anything. Because in other words, there's always an unknown. In other words, this is, what do you call it? Conversational algebra. Right? You understand? Because algebra is how to find the unknown. So, you have what's there, you have your unknown, right? And then you have a process to get to that. So that's your middle. No? Right? Okay. Yes. So, therefore, working on these absolute platforms is very important. Because if you're dealing with universal truth, that means there's no situation you can't apply it in. Maybe we're not so practiced, so we may run into trouble sometimes in applying it, but it's not that it can't be applied. Does that make sense? Like, so you have something that is the situation in which you're observing, you're trying to, in a situation, establish a higher truth. So you need a medium that's going to establish that. But that medium must be connected to what's the situation. At the same time, that a medium must be connected to that absolute truth. Right? So the conclusion of that, you know, there's a relationship there. Does that make sense? So you're always building on relationship. So the more you understand the process of relationship and how these universal formulas always work, then this becomes very, very easy. If it's just a matter of emotion and feelings and speculation, then this whole process will actually be extremely difficult. Yes? No? Yes.
If in this process one wanted to bring up a possible counterexample and show its faultiness, would you bring that up at the third point or after the fifth point?
No. The fifth point means if you're trying to show a counter argument or something that maybe that it can't be brought up after the fifth one because you've already concluded it. So then that means because your conclusion is actually just is proving your first point. In other words, your first point, your statement, that's what you're trying to prove. Then you have your reasons, you're trying to prove it, your examples. Then you're bringing it back to, again, the reasons. But now you understand the reasons because of the example, and then you make your point again. So the time that we would bring them up, if we're making the presentation, is at the third point. When you're giving your examples, then you can show other people their ideas and how your example disproves them. Right? The person that is making the counter argument, he'll bring it up at the second stage. Because at the first stage, if I say, the hill's on fire, what do I know about it? So I can't disprove the hill's on fire. Right? It's not a discussion because you don't know what the medium is that you came to that conclusion. But as soon as I say, there's smoke on the hill, right? Then I could say, you know, that it's something else. No, it's not fire, it's, you know, how you say, it's very cold, so it's mist. Like that, you know, so then you can give your examples, you know what I'm saying? And then you disprove them. Does that make sense? Then once you've disproved it, then you bring it together because your second point, your reason, now is able to be established because you've brought their point into your point. Right? Does that make sense? And then from there, then you go back to your first point, you know, in giving that conclusion. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Very good. Okay. The first premise states a positive fact. The second premise states the reason for the assertion. Assertion. The third premise then confirms the relationship between the reason for the assertion and the asserted fact itself as supported by a well-known example. Right? You have your point, you have your reason for your point, then your third level then establishes that reason for that point, the reason for that and their facts are connected. Right. And you give example. Like that. Well-known example means something that people can relate to. Ideally from the scriptures. The fourth constituent of the syllogism represents the application of the universal proposition to the present case. The fifth part or conclusion is drawn from the preceding four parts. Right? Does that make sense? So one is a reason, means the first one is your fact that's to be proven. The second one's your reasons. The third one gives all your examples and all that. The fourth one shows how the reason is applicable. Right? It has concluded the other things. Right? And the fifth one is now your proven statement. Right? Before it was a statement, now it's a proven statement. Does this make sense? Yes? Yes.
Could you say that the example would be avideya because it contains the elements of the order?
Yes, you could probably say that. At the same time as you're dealing with To gain a proper understanding of the workings of the law of logic, it is necessary to examine more closely how a systematic syllogism functions. For this purpose, the following example may be reanalyzed. There is fire on the hill because there is smoke, and where there is smoke, there is fire. As was previously discussed, fire is the major term, the hill is the minor term, and smoke is the middle term. The middle term, smoke, is so called because, on one hand, it is connected to the minor term, hill, and on the other hand, it is universally related to the major term, fire. This middle term is also called reason or grounds, since it is because of its perception that the major term is inferred. Right. That's why it's called the reason, because of it, then you can say the other thing is there. Thus, an inference has two conditions. The knowledge of the middle term must exist in the minor term, and a relationship must exist between the middle and the major terms. It is not possible to realize the existence of fire on the hill as a conclusion based on inferential reasoning if the invariable concomitance between the middle and major terms is not established. Right? No, does that make sense? After all the wordage. Then. In other words, if you can't establish that the smoke and the fire are connected, then you can't prove that there's fire on the hill. Right? In other words, you have to be, that's why it's the middle term. The middle term is, the smoke is seeable, visible on the hill, and the smoke is universally connected to fire. Therefore, where there's the smoke, the fire is there. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the universality establishes that because it's there, the other thing is there. Right? Does that make sense? So the inference has to have all that. Means you have to have all three terms. Your minor, your major, and your middle. Your middle has to be connected to both. That's why it's called the middle. Right? The conclusion, between the middle and the conclusion, or the major, that must be a universal connection. Right? Then you can say is that, therefore, the thing inferred by the middle term is therefore connected to the first term, because the smoke is connected to the first term. Right? Smoke is connected to the hill. Smoke is connected to fire. Therefore, fire is connected to the hill. Does that make sense? Like that. If those three aren't there, it's not actually an inference. You know what I'm saying? So you say, this guy is doing some nonsense, you know, that's your conclusion. So why is that? Because I saw him, you know, in the park, you know, picking his nose. So now you have to connect that the picking his nose has something to do with, universally is connected with that nonsense. Right? If it's not, then your inference doesn't work. Does that make sense? Yes.
Universal laws that have exceptions.
Yes.
Universal relationships, can there also be exceptions? And should we be worried about those?
Should we be worried about those? I'm not sure. We'll see if they come up here. But the thing is the exceptions are mentioned in Shastra. So that's why it's important that it may be the exception, but that is the exception. It's not the rule. You know, because let's say your stomach works on fire, but there's no smoke. You know what I'm saying? So like that, acid is fire, there's no smoke. Your eyes work on fire, there's no smoke. You know, so there's always going to be those exceptions. You know what I'm saying? But the element is that, does that make sense? Yes. No, it's only an exception because it's connected to Shastra.
Any exception would come up if someone weren't throwing the Shastra.
Yes. In other words, you stick to your point because the exception doesn't disprove the rule. You know, they're taking it that because there's an exception, therefore the rule isn't valid. Right? That's like that's basically, you'll find those persons who use that the most strongly, you know, or at least in our kind of environment, are pessimists. Because pessimism means that there's no truth that holds validity eternally. At some point, you'll find something that disproves it. So their point is the only absolute truth is there is no absolute truth. But how can they say that so absolutely? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that they work on, because they're pessimists, therefore they bring up the thing that, the exception, and they feel because the exception has been found, it disproves the whole theory. No, all you found is the exception. Very nice, you're intelligent. Right? But it's not based on trying to find the truth, it's based on pessimism. Otherwise, if it's based on truth, you'd understand the principle that's being made and then come up with, but what about this exception? But when you go straight from when somebody presents their position and you find the exception to disprove it, that means you actually don't believe it. Right? It's not actually the valid way to come about the knowledge. Yes. Agnostic? Agnostic is that you have the idea that there could be a God or not, but you're not sure. Right? No, what we're saying is that pessimism, it's a form of materialism that arises when being very good and nice and therefore trying to enjoy the results coming from, you know, good work, doesn't always give you results you expect. You know, you still suffer. So therefore you become pessimistic that actually nothing is actually going to make you happy. Nothing works. So the conclusion therefore is, I disconnect myself from this endeavor of connecting the senses and sense objects in a very nice, you know, social and socially considerate way. Then when I disconnect myself from all that, therefore, then I'll be happy. Right? So it's actually Buddhism. You understand? It's just different forms of negating one's existence. So pessimism is just the, you know, it's a general category, but being called that is generally the more narrow Western presentations. Otherwise, your impersonalism, your Buddhism, your Shaivism, they're all in the pessimistic category. You know, they're all gyan, means extinguishing one's existence. Does that make sense?
I guess nihilist philosophy.
Nihilists say, yeah, because the point is they're trying to get rid of existence, and then they say, in that state, you'll be happy. Because of existence, I'm unhappy. I get rid of existence, I'll be happy. But if you get rid of existence, you're not there to know if you're happy or not. You know what I'm saying? So, and it's not something you can prove. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Does that make sense? You know, the man is sitting there lamenting, you know, on the balcony that, you know, life's so bad and all this. So therefore you push him over the balcony and he's, you know, killed. And so, but how can you ascertain that now he's happy? You know what I'm saying? How do you ascertain it? So that no one can actually tell if it works. You know, it's like trying to figure out, you know, what the cyanide tastes like. You know what I'm saying? So it's not something that can be done. They know it's salty, sweet, or sour, because everybody who does it writes S, but before that they can't get to the second letter before they're dead. So that's as far as the research work has gotten. Yeah, let me say, some people are pretty weird. Their commitment to science. Yeah. I know. I mean, I don't know about recently, but back, I think, in the 50s and 60s, I think it was more of a like that. Maybe before that, but I'm not sure if there's been further recent studies or they have some other way to determine. Unless the S was for stupid. It's a useless thing, but that's what most of your modern science and other thing is. It's really get into detail are really useless stuff. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they eventually try to find some use for it, but much of the time it's just, you know. Yeah, like that. You know, it's like, does it really? I mean, it may matter to somebody the life cycle of a tsetse fly, you know, like that. But for most people, they've never even seen one, and you probably wouldn't want to see one, right? Because I hear they carry all kinds of amazing diseases. So. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. Thus, an inference has two conditions. The knowledge of the middle term must exist in the minor term, and the relationship must exist between the middle and major terms. It is not possible to realize the existence of fire on the hill as a conclusion based on inferential reasoning if the invariable concomitance between the middle and major terms is not established. Right? You've established that the middle term is connected to the minor term. It's part of the minor. But unless you can connect the middle term to the major term, you can't connect the major term to the minor term. Right? Because if you're trying to say, you know, how you say, A equals B and B equals C, so then A equals C. So if you can't prove that B equals C, you can't say A equals C. Yeah? This invariable concomitance between these two terms of an inference is called vyapti, the logical ground for inference, right? So vyapti means all three aspects are in place, right? The relationship between A and B, the relationship between B and C, and so therefore you can establish the relationship between A and C, right? We've established the relation between anoi and binoi. right? Now the question is between Vinoy and Sinoy. So is there a connection between being Noy and seeing Noy? Because we found in a relation between being Noy and Anoy. No? So you're saying Anoy means not Noy. So whether to be Noy or not to be Noy, that's the question. Denoy. I never thought of that. Yes, we need to denoy this situation here. Yes, okay. Thank you. You've added another letter. And I guess in your modern things, we could set up a web page. Enoy, right? Enoy. No? You have to keep up to date, right? Okay. So that's vyapti when you have all those three in place, right? Concomitance guarantees the validity of the conclusion. The validity or invalidity of an inference depends on the validity or invalidity of vyapti. Therefore, Nyaya philosophy goes into great detail concerning the nature of concomitance and the fallacies related to it. In other words, there has to be this connections between it, right? B and C have to be related if you're going to say, A and B have to be related, B has to be related to C, otherwise you can't say A equals C, right? It's connected to C. So that's the whole point. That being vyapti, so inference means that Nyaya will go to great detail to make sure that it actually is connected, otherwise you say it's not. Right? So then that will be the next points that we're going to get into. So that goes on for a lot longer. Okay, so we'll end here. Is there any questions? No questions? So you would change it to Anoy or Vinoy, that is the question. Hmm? You're happy with? Being Binoy. No, but you're Noy, but you're being Noy. Right? You know, so like you're saying, be happy, so be Noy. Right? No?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.